We've been hearing for years now about the high probability of a strong earthquake in our part of the world along the Cascadia subduction zone. But years of coverage and preparation and publicity by various agencies suddenly pale by comparison with a single piece in The New Yorker in this week's issue. The Catherine Schultz article called The Really Big One is getting shared over and over in social media and producing follow-up pieces in many other media, obviously this one included. Because of the New Yorker piece and the reaction to it, more people than ever seem to realize that a big quake on the Cascadia subduction zone will cause major damage and kill a lot of people, the zone stretching from Cape Mendocino up into British Columbia. This is not news to people who know the zone and the preparations for the quake. Eric Dittmer's with us. He's a former geology professor at Southern Oregon University. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
Good to have you. Larry Masterman is with us as well. He is the City of Medford Emergency Management Coordinator. Larry, welcome to you.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
So we're talking about, in terms of the big one, we hear that there's a chance, chances are 1 in 3 that we'll get one, I guess, between 8 and 9 within 50 years. The chances of 1 in 10 for the really big one, maybe 9 or above. So, but this is no surprise to you, Eric Dittmer, I'm thinking.
Well, over the last 3 decades, the pieces of information have come together by various scientists looking at drowned trees and landslides under the water, all of which can be dated. The big finding was there's over 40 such large events in the last 10,000 years, which gives us the luxury of some kind of periodicity. Most of those are in the 250 to 350-year range. And that the reference point was 1700, where the last such large earthquake occurred here in the Northwest, creating a big tsunami that was recorded in Japan, January 26, 1700. So we are definitely within the window of a recurrence that we should not only be aware of, but maybe do something about.
So the period of 250 to 350 years, and we're 315 years since the last one. So as you point out, definitely within the window. What is the geology here for the folks who might not have heard of Cascadia before, as apparently a lot of people hadn't?
Okay. I think many people have heard about the Pacific Ring of Fire, and that's where crustal plates come together when they collide. Those are the potentials for the largest earthquakes. Think of Alaska, Japan, Chile, and even Indonesia have plates that are coming together. The San Andreas, on the other hand, have two plates that are sliding side to side past each other. Don't have the potential for as large an earthquake. The challenge for us is that these large earthquakes tend to be further apart as far as time, which means we don't have an immediate memory in many of our lives here in the Pacific Northwest of the big earthquake. And you have an earthquake memory in California that's much easier to hang on to because earthquakes along the San Andreas are more frequent. Ours are not as frequent. So our Cascadia situation with the collision, the clues are we have volcanism, and we have coastal mountain ranges, and we have the evidence for very large earthquakes that have just come to be. And the challenge is to keep public awareness up about our situation and then what to do about it.
Which raises the question for emergency managers like you, Larry Masterman. I mean, I have to imagine this is something that you talk about often with guys from FEMA on down.
Mostly we talk about it with everybody and anybody who will listen. We've done a lot of public presentations. Eric's been a great partner in this regard. He and I kind of have an earthquake roadshow that we've been lucky enough to distribute, to deliver to everybody and anybody who will give us 45 minutes or an hour. But we talk about a lot about this with other agencies, with our own people, with the City of Medford. Our city departments are becoming better prepared all the time. Social groups, emergency services organizations, business, any of those folks. We did our show last year with the National Guard unit, the local folks. So you bet we talk about it every chance we get.
Are there clear lines of responsibility for when it happens? And people are talking in terms of when, not if, right?
Lines of responsibility for when?
In terms of who's going to do what, I guess, is what I'm saying. I mean, not the responsibility for saying when it's going to happen, but I mean, when it happens, are the lines of responsibility clear for who does what between different levels of government?
The lines are clear, but they're fairly theoretical. You know, everybody should understand that. Let's just take the city of Medford by itself for right now. Our efforts certainly go beyond the city limits, but the city of Medford has about 200 public safety employees, law enforcement, fire, and so on and so forth, about 200 of those. The daytime population of Medford is about 150,000 people. Now, let's assume three-quarters of those public safety folks are either on the job when the earthquake happens or they are available to come in when they're recalled. Mm-hmm. That's one responder for every 1,000 people in Medford. So, you know, yeah, we're going to have huge responsibilities, but government can't do it all. And FEMA is not going to be there in the first day or two or three. So our responsibility in local government is to help prepare the community beforehand. So, you know, the presentations that Eric and I have done, the materials that are out there, what's happening on websites and things like that, those are a part of that. But the biggest responsibility is to every individual, every family, to know how to take care of itself, how to take care of the neighbors, how to be self-sufficient. And everybody's kind of heard, oh, well, you know, I have a three-day kit. That's great. 3 days is better than nothing. 3 days is not going to be enough for an incident of this magnitude. We recommend at least 7 days, and more is better. Water, food, medications if you need those, protection from the elements, a coat, good shoes, sunscreen, you know, things like that. So as far as responsibility, the more the individuals and the families can take responsibility for their own safety and well-being, the more resilient our community is going to be. The local response organizations are going to lead that local response. And when the state comes in to help and feds and other states and other organizations come in to help, they're coming in to support that local response, not to take over. So we have a shared responsibility, and we take that responsibility real seriously here at the local government.
All right, but that's a good point, is for folks to not think in terms of like, oh, there'd be lots of water and food down at the firehouse. There won't be. You need to stock up your own stuff.
We're not sure there will be a firehouse. Now, our new construction, the new police headquarters, is being built to rigid standards. The new fire stations will be built the same way. But as it stands today, some of our firehouses are a little bit dated. They may not be functional. They may not be habitable.
We're talking about the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake anticipated sometime in the future. Along the long Cascadia subduction zone from Cape Mendocino up to British Columbia, Larry Masterman is the City of Medford Emergency Management Coordinator. Eric Dittmer is a former geology professor at Southern Oregon University. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Steve and Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Okay, back in the 90s, I believe it was, Ogami did the Columbia Regional Earthquake Workshop and came out with a pretty handy publication, showed the bridges they figured would go down and so on and so forth. But one thing they did not even touch upon, which I think is of more immediate pressing importance, is the dams around here. Hills Creek is an earth-filled dam. No cement, no rebar, just rocks piled on top of each other that feeds down into Lookout, which is a pretty good-sized dam, which feeds down into Dexter, which feeds down into Eugene. Cougar Reservoir, according to the sign, is the second-largest earth-filled dam in the United States. Now, has anybody that you know of done extensive engineering and reliability studies on these things since then? Do we know how they are going to hold up on a big quake, or are we really in danger from the same people that brought us the Katrina seawalls?
All right. Thanks for the question, Steve. Appreciate it. So, Larry, this must be one you've heard about from the discussions of the past, I'm thinking.
Steve's call is perfectly timed. I spent yesterday morning with the Bureau of Reclamation, the Army Corps of Engineers, and a whole bunch of other agencies on a dam safety workshop and tabletop exercise. And so the earth-filled dams, how vulnerable they are depends on how old they are. Some of the dams are 100 years old or more. The more modern dams, they expect to hold up much better. And their engineering is more complex than you might think looking at, wow, look at that neatly ordered pile of rock. They are zoned. They have the interior is an impermeable material, clay or something like that. Different types of rock to keep that in place and hold it up. And we learned yesterday that of all the historic dam failures, 1% have been related to earthquakes. Others have been related to other issues, you know, problems with site selection before they were built, the engineering and whatnot. So most of our dams around here are expected to do very well in an earthquake.
But they haven't had huge earthquakes, I'm assuming, since their construction.
Not that I know of, sure. In the Central Oregon, Southern Oregon area, that's true.
Well, Eric Dittmer, then what kind of numbers are we talking about for a Cascadia subduction zone quake in terms of magnitude?
The Cascadia subduction zone itself is over 600 miles long. And the two scenarios have been discussed by folks who are doing the in-depth research. One is that part of it, and most likely the southern part off of Oregon and Northern California, might release. And if only that segment slides, then you're looking at magnitude eight and a half. Now, the San Francisco earthquake back in 1906 was an 8.6. Mm-hmm. Okay. The issue we're dealing with for a 9 is if the entire subduction zone unzips, which takes time, which is why we're worried about the earthquake duration being 3, 4, 5 minutes. Now,
does the greater duration actually make the magnitude greater? It's not the force, it's the time?
It's both the time and the force. Mm-hmm. And the magnitude, it depends on how far away you are from the epicenter. The thinking is right now the epicenter would be basically the most severe shaking would be offshore, off the Oregon-Washington coast. It would be less, perhaps, inland where we are here along I-5. However, the duration would be the same. So we would be dealing with serious casualties. The New Yorker article, I think, mentioned something like 13,000 mm-hmm. people. But that might be low. What if it happened at the worst possible time, you know, in the middle of the night, and you have a whole bunch in the summertime with a whole bunch of people at the coast, you know, vacationing, that don't watch the signs for, you know, evacuation route for tsunamis. And so those casualties could be higher. The other more positive note is this is survivable with individuals, as Larry mentioned, making the effort to prepare and have stockpiles and have the resources to be able to respond with Red Cross training and knowing what to do at home.
We are talking about the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake, figured to come along sometime in the next 50 to 100 years, and it could be next week, it could be next century. Eric Dittmer is a former geology professor at SOU, Larry Masterman, the City of Medford Emergency Management Coordinator. You can join this discussion at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Lauren in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi there. I want to make two comments and then hear what your guests have to say about it.
Sure.
One thing I think that we keep skirting around with earthquakes, I've been in two, not huge ones, but San Francisco, I think it was 88 or 89.
89. Mm-hmm.
And most recently, Mexico City, 2012. But that hit much worse in Oaxaca. You know, where I guess my point is this. For your average person, you can't predict it, and you might be in the wrong place at the wrong time. I mean, we don't know. It's so nice to think everyone could survive, but we don't know. And that's one of the terrifying things of an earthquake compared to, you know, a storm or a flood. You might get some warning and you might be able to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other comment is, You know, I've heard mostly really bad things from people either who live in certain areas like Colorado, New York, you know, where big floods have hit. Colorado, I guess, was just 2 years ago, and New York City, remember the hurricane?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard mostly not very good things about FEMA, how they often make things worse, and really horrendous things about the Red Cross. And often the groups that really help are more local groups like church groups and even very simple groups like Food Not Bombs that are at least feeding people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of terrifying to me to think that FEMA might come in and act more like the National Guard or the police than really help a lot of people. So I wonder if your guest could comment on this.
All right, let's go there. Thanks for that, Lauren. Appreciate that. So Larry Massman, you were in that Loma Prieta earthquake in San Francisco in 1989, I understand. You got to be part of the follow-up effort.
That's true. I was the paramedic captain on duty for the city of San Francisco. I was in one of our stations at 5:04 that afternoon when the earthquake hit, and got the privilege of managing the medical and health response for about the next 14 hours. And, yeah, that was quite an experience. And maybe that's part of why I'm such a believer. Besides what I had to do with work, I had a wife, a two-year-old, and a six-year-old living about 30 miles away in a coastal community. And coastal soils don't do real well in earthquakes, by and large. And so we were fairly well prepared as a family, and that really paid off. My wife knew how to turn off the gas. The water heater was bolted to the wall. We had supplies and whatnot, and that made a big difference. As far as Lauren's comment about being in the wrong place at the wrong time, she's right. We can't choose when, you know, if we were in earthquake country, we'd know when, or if we were in hurricane country, we'd have an idea when those are coming. There's a solution to that for us when we don't know what's going to happen or when or how big it's going to be, and that's to be prepared all the time. I have a kit in my personal car. I have a kit in my work vehicle. I have a kit at home. And every desk at the city of Medford has underneath a small survival kit, a safety tube from the Red Cross. So, you know, in the car, I'm not ready to survive for 2 weeks, but 3-4 days is enough time to get by until someone can get to you or until you can take other actions. But at home, I have enough food to last my wife and I probably 30 days or more. Having plenty of water is important, but I also recommend having water filters because you can only carry so much water. But there are small pocket-sized filters that are very effective, and the filters I carry are good for 100,000 gallons of filtered water.
Wow,
so
that's a lot.
So there are so many things that we can do to be prepared, and we should be prepared at work, at home, at school, in our cars or our daily activities. And in my case, you know, wherever I am, my car is not far away. And so all of us have that option.
We've been talking preparedness for so many years now, and certainly in your line of work, it is what you do. So what do you make of the fact that it seems like it takes one New Yorker article to make everybody go, oh my God, there's going to be an earthquake, when you've been saying it for 20 years now?
I'm not the New Yorker. You know, who is, right? But, you know, we just never know what's going to trigger a response. It was a well-written article. I don't think anybody disagrees with any of the science that was provided in the article. Some of the comments and some of the conclusions might have been a little bit over the top, but you just never know. And with social media now getting bigger all the time, maybe it was just that perfect nexus of conditions. Where I think the article ended too soon was it described, you know, horrible conditions and how awful this thing was going to be, and not one word about, so what do we do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Eric's job and my job, is we're here to prepare our organizations and our communities and our people for what can we do about it. And if we're prepared for that big earthquake, we're also prepared for the next big winter storm or the next fire that makes the wildfire that makes the air difficult to breathe. And being prepared for anything makes us better prepared for everything, and that's an important point.
One of the real standout quotes in the article is I forget who said it, but the idea that everything west of I-5 will be toast. I'm sure that rang loudly with you, Eric Dittmer. What do you make of that, and do you agree with it?
Well, one of our initial responses around Medford was, which side of I-5 do you live on? And that was probably not the intent of the comment. The shaking will be worse toward the coast, and the coast will have a tsunami threat within 15 minutes. That will be serious. So people who live at the coast or visit the coast really should look at those tsunami evacuation route signs and see where they are, like looking at exit signs in a movie theater. That just should be practice. The severity of ground shaking will decrease as you go to the east. The ability for you to deal with it, as Larry said, the idea is, and thanks for the article in the New Yorker, think about what you're going to do. You know, what are the safe places in your home or at your work? Where are the hazard areas? You have sliding glass door to the outside. Maybe that won't be the best exit route. Don't just stand there when the earthquake starts shaking, wondering how big it's going to be. This is a time for duck, cover, and hold. And the situation for your family, well, they may be all spread out all over town. Maybe you should talk about where you might want to meet. The other resources we have really locally, community emergency response teams, Ashland, Jacksonville, Central Point, and Medford now have teams. They're trained, and within a neighborhood, what a resource that person would be within a neighborhood. You may not be able to leave your neighborhood, but you want to be able to survive, and the group of you at the neighborhood, within the neighbors, can do that if you talk about it ahead of time.
All right, I'm gonna extend the segment. Can you guys stick around for about 5 more minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a call from Peter in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Eric and Larry.
Hi there. Was this Peter you asked?
Yeah, it's you.
Perfect. Hey, what's going to happen to I-5? Who knows about what toast means, but a good shake will probably destroy the, or at least damage, the viaduct over the middle of Medford. And I'm curious, what's traffic going to be on I-5?
All right, we got a little garbled there, but we got the basic question. We'll have to hang on for the answer for just a moment. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and talk a bit more. We'll complete the section with Eric and Larry. We're talking to Eric Dittmer, a former geology professor at Southern Oregon University, and Larry Masterman, who is the emergency management coordinator for the city of Medford. And the question on the table from Peter was about what happens, for example, to the I-5 viaduct in Medford. Eric, you got that one?
Yes. Excellent question. The infrastructure that we have relied on for years will be the weak link after an earthquake, because it just doesn't take long period ground shaking, especially in when there are multiple minutes. Viaduct would likely come down. Crossing Bear Creek, for example, from east side to west side of Bear Creek will be a challenge. The reports from the Department of Transportation in Oregon say that viaduct, not just a viaduct, but the entire I-5 corridor would be compromised by failing bridges, and 101 as well. So they will cease to function, and we would be much more on our own than we are right now. So the experience, even on the 15-second shaking in 89, had the Cypress multiple-layer freeway near Oakland fail. And an elevated structure not unlike the viaduct in Kobe, Japan, in, I think, 94, that one fell over. And so we can't count on that. One of the things folks can think about as you go from place to place here in this valley is, what bridges do you cross or go under? Those might be down, and your travel opportunities decreased.
So, Larry Masterman, people really need to think about different ways they would get to work. What would happen if work weren't there? What would happen if your home collapsed? I mean, there's a lot of things that people need to make some assumptions about that they generally don't want to think about.
So true. And the key thing, wherever you are, is survival. You need to have water. If you're going to be on your own for a day or several days, you got to have water. You have to have protection from the elements. Food and some of the other creature comfort things are nice, but but the lack of those isn't going to do us in the short term. So people need to think about having their kits or being prepared at work, at home, in the other places they go, in their day-to-day activities. And, you know, those folks who are okay and can come to work, especially public employees or firefighters and law enforcement. In San Francisco, for example, in 89, there was no recall mechanism for police, fire, and paramedics. They responded back to work spontaneously. Those who can do that, yeah, think about how you're going to do that. We are planning with the city for mechanisms for someone to let somebody know after a large emergency. Those law enforcement and fire and other essential personnel that are on duty, somebody needs to be able to call their families and let them know, hey, your husband, your wife is okay. Find out how's your family doing, be able to communicate that back. You know, obviously, I was concerned about my family after the Loma Prieta earthquake. It was about 3 hours before I could get a working phone line and an opportunity to call. And
they were okay.
Believe me, they were okay, but, you know, my wife was smart. We were fairly well prepared. We hadn't thought about things like communication. And when I did manage to get a working phone line and call home from the Emergency Operations Center, she'd been really amazingly clever. She had changed the outgoing message on her answering machine, and this was the old-style tape-driven answering machines. She changed the outgoing message, said, "This is Paula. We're okay. We're at the neighbor's house. Here's the phone number." So I was able to call the neighbor's house, let her know that I was okay. She was equally worried about me, but I was kind of distracted by other things that needed to happen in San Francisco. And so think about those things. Everybody can make a plan. Everybody can put together a kit. You can buy them off the shelf, or you can put them together for little or no money, and everybody should be doing that.
I'll take one final call here. Wren and Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking earthquakes with Larry Masterman and Eric Dittmer.
Yes, is that me?
Yes.
My name is Wren. I grew up in earthquake country in California, and one thing that we notice is that the birds are completely quiet outside before an earthquake. And I've been in several down there, and it's a helpful thing to pay attention to in anticipating an earthquake. And I wondered if your people there knew or were aware of this.
Let us find out. Thanks for that call, Wren. Appreciate it. Eric, any knowledge of this?
Yes. As we teach about earthquakes in the 20 years of classes and just experience, I hear many, many anecdotal descriptions, quarter horses that are just out of control the day before an earthquake happened in San Juan Bautista. And like you say, birds getting quiet. We don't have any scientific connection to figure out why. Some speculation is that the rumbling of the ground, which is a huge speaker, might be a low enough tone that dogs, for example, can sense, but people can't. Those kinds of things. But no, we hear that often. We just don't have a direct relationship, and unfortunately cannot use that to predict an exact time for an earthquake.
Right. What we do know is that based on core samples from the ocean floor, the Cascadia subduction zone tends to blow about every 243 years. It's been 315 since the last one, so it's due at some point somewhere around 8 or 9 in magnitude. Are we safe on all those, Eric?
Yes. And this is the first generation here in the Pacific Northwest that knows that, and we'd be better off being proactive than sitting around and wringing our hands.
Okay. All kinds of resources out there. We'll make sure we link to a bunch of them if we haven't linked to them already on our website at jeffexchange.org. Eric Dittmer is a former geology professor at Southern Oregon University. Larry Masterman, City of Medford Emergency Management Coordinator. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.